Welcome to the My Control Room podcast, the only podcast that features discussion, tips, and commentary on control room ergonomics and much more. This is part one in a two-part series regarding UCDS-provided workshops. And now, President of User-Centered Design Services, Ian Nimmo.
Good morning. This is Ian Nimmo with User-Centered Design Services. We're a human factor company that focuses on achieving excellence in the control room. We design control rooms and we help provide services around alarm management, human-machine interface, workload studies, and dealing with fatigue. At User-Centered Design Services, we provide workshops for our customers, and those workshops focus in on some of the important aspects of control room design. The control room design one usually takes about 2 days and covers a full range of situation awareness. We look at what is situation awareness, and we normally start with a video, Miracle on the Hudson, where we actually see how situation awareness really comes into managing a major accident like that incident. And then we learn from the values that were applied around situation awareness, and we apply them to a control room, and we look at the lighting in the control room, we look at distractions in the control room, we look at traffic flow through the control room, and we basically work down each of the things that compromise situation awareness in a modern control room. And from that, we learn how we should lay out a control room, how a control operator's desk should be designed, how many screens an operator can manage, and basically the layout of his keyboard, his mouse, how many keyboards and mice he should have. We often see control rooms with too many of those. So we look at how the ergonomics of the control room comes in, and there's an international standard that we refer to, international standard ISO 11064, which comes in 6 sections. And basically we go through the best practices for each of those during the workshop. In the workshop for control room design, we often look at the gap analysis. And in that gap analysis, we look at where your existing control room is compared to the best practices. And so it's not just a talk about control rooms. We often apply it to directly to your control room and give you some practical examples of how you can make improvements to the control room. That leads us into other workshops, and obviously one of the first ones, as we talk about consoles and screens, is the HMI design. The HMI design workshop is a 2-day workshop. We've done it for some customers in just 1 day, where they've struggled with their resources to free them up for more than 2 days. And so we do one day on HMI and another day on alarms. But the HMI workshop goes through the practical examples of why, first of all, HMIs are changing. What do they look like today? Why are we not using colour like we used to use colour? And helping to understand why colour is a coding system, and we should have things like reserve colours for alarms. The whole design of the HMI looks at, again, the practical examples of how we communicate with operators and how the control system provides information and how we turn that information into data so that operators can detect, diagnose and respond to abnormal situations. And that's our whole goal, is to focus on the operator's ability to detect a problem. And the HMI is one of the key tools in our toolbox for the operator being able to diagnose a problem. So again, the design is critical, and we try to focus on in that workshop really how to do a good HMI design, What are the rules that should be applied? And we start by developing a HMI philosophy. In that HMI philosophy, we look at the rules for using colour, how text should be from a size of font to the type of font, to what type of font you should use for numbers. And again, the two may be different. Then basically how we should use lines and line thickness. And again, line thickness can be a coding system, same as colour. And we've demonstrated how we can do that on electrical distribution networks. We then take the design and we look at how do we bring clarity into the design of the HMI. So again, we don't overload the operator with too much information. So again, there's a lot of work goes into the HMI design workshop. And again, there's a lot of practical examples. We go through some examples of bad design and why they're bad. And then we also look at what is a good design. And again, how do you need to change? What are the things that you're doing that have been identified as mistakes, and how do we correct them, and what does good look like? And that's been one of the big things from our workshops, is being able to demonstrate what good looks like. The last major workshop we do is on alarm management. Again, similar to HMI design, it starts out by, first of all, understanding situation awareness. And then it looks at, what is a good alarm philosophy and what are the things in a good alarm philosophy. And one of the things that we try to identify is what does a good alarm system look like? And again, how many alarms can an operator physically manage? And so we review the key performance indicators that identify a good alarm management system. And we'll refer to several documents, like the MUA 191 document, which was the starting point for alarm management. It was a good guideline that was produced a few years ago with the help of the Abnormal Situation Management Consortium. And I was involved in that writing of that document and funding of that document. And then basically we look at now the international standards, the ISA standards on alarm management. And again, what does a good philosophy look like? What are the sections that should be in the philosophy? And then basically it's going to look at what does a good alarm look like? And again, a lot of people today struggle to identify what is a good alarm and when should an alarm be rejected. As not practical, like it's duplicated, it produces too many alarms, it's not based on the right measurements, it might not have the right type of filtering to it. So again, we go through some very practical examples of what does good look like from an alarm perspective. We look in detail at your alarm system, again doing more of a gap analysis, and try to identify what is the path to rationalization of your alarms, and looking at what it will take for you to get to a level which we determine as predictive. You may be reactive today, and there's a few steps along the way, like stabilization, making your alarm system robust. And again, those are the KPIs that are identified in the MUA 191 standard, or guideline, I should say, and basically help you understand how to tackle this alarm problem. And again, how to understand what was the maximum number of alarms that your operator can manage, and how do you prioritize those alarms and set them so that the operator can physically use them. How do you deal with alarm floods? Those are all topics that will come out in the alarm management workshop. And again, try to be very practical. And again, generally speaking, we try to do that over a two-day workshop. The last workshop we do is one on fatigue. And again, this is, again, a very practical one based on the new API, recommended practices, 755. We look at what is fatigue and, you know, basically what are some of the countermeasures to it today. And obviously one of the big ones is hours of service regulations and applying management of change if you want to go outside of those recommendations. But we look at some practical examples around dealing with fatigue, the type of countermeasures like exercise. That's a good countermeasure. Getting the lighting in the control room up is another good countermeasure. And so again, we go through some practical examples of how to do that and then how to basically write a procedure around a fatigue risk management plan. And again, that's all going to be based on that API 755 document. Hey, this is Ian Nimmo with User Centred Design Services. I'm the President and CEO of the company. We've just been reviewing workshops and the type of services that UCDS provides around workshops. And we'd like to invite you to contact us if you're interested in one of these workshops. We try to, again, keep them very economical. We try to keep them short. And we try to keep them focused on the facts and the ability for your people to improve. And we've got a lot of good feedback on our workshops. Customers get a lot out of them. And again, they're well thought through, well prepared, and they have the details that you need to actually solve problems. So I just want to thank you for listening to part one of our podcast on workshops. And I invite you to listen to part two. And part two will again go into a little bit more detail.
Thank you for listening to the My Control Room podcast. Again, this was part one in a two-part series regarding UCDS provided workshops. To learn more about Ian Nimmo and UCDS, please visit mycontrolroom.com.